Great. I can hear that we can't hear. Yeah, I understand that. And we're fixing it. And as soon as it comes through, I think we'll all know. At this point, I can tell there's still nothing, so don't worry. I will check with you when you're needed to do something. This side? No, it's all good here. There we go. That's the one. Okay. And what about the level? Is that about right? Does anyone need it a little? Okay. That's good. Good, good. Happiness. All right. So I'm glad my mic's working, and now I'm going to try and compete with the really eloquent, fast singing that's going on in the background. And so we will have a, I don't know if they call it rap or they have a different name for this, but like, that's what it kind of sounds like to me. So I'll try and keep up. I'll try and give it, make it lively, make it interesting. If you miss some, don't worry. There'll be another verse. So as usual, we'll actually start off with a meditation together. And I'd like to actually suggest a practice that we could do. It will be related to the talk, but you'll have to make the connection yourself. Okay, I'm not going to explain everything. But like, this meditation is called Don't Scratch the Itch. Right? Some of you will have played this meditation before. It's not in the greatest hits of meditations that you may have come across. It's not along with loving kindness and samadhi and things like this, but it's a really good practice. So all you need to do is wait for an itch to appear. Now, sometimes you feel like scratching your face or your chin or your arm, or you feel like moving in some way. You know, you might just feel a bit of discomfort, or maybe just wriggle a little bit. And what we're going to do in this meditation, it's only going to be 10 minutes, is we're not going to do that. That's all we're going to do. We're just going to see it, the urge to do that arise, and we're not going to do it. And just see what happens. Does that urge get bigger? Does it get smaller? Does it just pass? On its own? Is it just a wave? It goes away again. What happens if we don't do anything? Okay. Yeah. So something's going to appear. It's going to be a little bit unpleasant, and we're not going to try and get rid of it. Yeah. That's the goal. See what happens. All right. See you in 10 minutes. So thank you for participating in that meditation. It was very enjoyable for me. And yeah, also a lot of appreciation that you are here. You specifically, that you are here. And also you collectively, that we're all here together. And yeah, it's really, well, makes me feel really good actually that we're all here together and exploring our experience. I feel a lot of appreciation. So can I just check again that the volume is all right for you? Can you really hear all right? Yeah, great. I also just want to check that you're really happy where you are. If you feel like you're really far away and you want to be closer, you're really welcome to come closer. If you like being far away, you're also really welcome to head further away. I really don't mind. Yeah. And you don't need to know where you're heading before you get there. The space, there's lots more space once you get closer up, if you feel like it. So I hope that you're feeling some benefits from the kinds of practices that we've been suggesting to do, and that you're kind of finding your way in them to cultivate and support the kind of qualities that you want to see coming into fruition. And in many ways, we've already described enough kind of practices, we have enough here, that we could just, you know, roll on for the next few days. And, you know, the practices we've been doing today with keeping that awareness sensitive and just welcoming all the things that come in, that arise, and welcoming and allowing for them to leave can be a really wonderful kind of expression of freedom. Yeah. And, you know, you may notice that there's a kind of a kindness in there that resonates with the metta quality. And maybe that was made clear, or maybe it's kind of something that we can notice. And what we'll tend to notice is that kindness and openness and welcoming and allowing and these kinds of qualities are quite the opposite of the conditions that support dukkha, yeah, that support stress, that support reactivity, that support agitation, that support tension. Right? They don't tend to do that in the same way. And therefore, they're kind of freeing, skillful, wholesome, beautiful responses that we're encouraging. May not have mentioned already, but any time that actually doing the practice and it feels good, really feel invited to linger in that. Oh, it feels good right now. Right? You're allowed to feel good. Okay? Not too good. Don't want anyone getting high on this stuff, but like you're allowed to feel just a little bit good once in a while, occasionally, okay? Let's say once a day, you're allowed to feel good for a little bit of time. Then after that, put it aside, don't get attached, you know, that's very bad, and then we move on, okay? Back to the suffering that is our birthright, yeah. So if it feels good, notice how it feels good. Maybe notice that, okay, that's a good thing to do for me. Yeah, maybe I'll do that some more. Okay. And then just finding that way to move the dial a little bit, turning down the volume of the dukkha, yeah, turning up whatever, the volume of the kindness, the spaciousness, the allowing, all of that. Yeah. And so what I want to speak about tonight is another way that we can just keep doing that. Maybe it could go deeper. Maybe it could go subtler, whatever that might mean. Yeah, more refined, more delicate, more quiet. Maybe we could get involved in this situation a little bit earlier in the release, rather than like, oh, it's all built up to dukkha, let's bring in the kindness. Maybe we can get in a little bit lower down in the building up of experience. Okay, that's what I want to speak about. And so for that reason, I want to speak about something that is as far as I can tell, untranslatable, Vedana, right? So some of you will have heard of this word, Vedana, and kind of come across it, and maybe it makes a lot of sense to you. How many people feel like they know a fair bit about Vedana? Feel like you've got a good handle on it. All right. So I'm now going to confuse you by describing it as something completely different. No, I'm not. Not on purpose, anyway. But I might, accidentally. So perhaps there's a good translation in Hebrew. Perhaps there's a good translation in English. I don't think there is. So I made my own translation, which is Vedana is a niceness opinion. Okay? No, it's all right. We'll repeat this a few times. It's a niceness opinion. Now, does that translate into Hebrew? Does anyone who can understand what I'm saying? Okay. So is this nice? Is this not nice? Yeah? Is something nice or is something not nice? Okay?
It's not just, I'm hearing like
the translations
in the hall, so maybe we can just like get quieter so Nathan can explain.
Okay. So what I was wondering is, first of all, is there a way of describing this in Hebrew? What I just said? Nice. It's fine if there's not. You can just say no. You can say, our language cannot follow you, Nathan. That's fine. It also doesn't work in English, so don't worry. Yeah, it's not something that anyone would ever say. Yeah, and sometimes, you know, we try and get a translation that works or something like this. More accurately, it's much easier to describe. It's the hedonic preference classification. Yeah, the hedonic preference classification. Yeah, can you translate that? No, we can't translate. There's no translation for this word, which is what I said at the beginning, and now you just have to agree with me. Okay, so we've got Vedana. Yeah, it's barely English. It was a bit of Greek and a bit of Latin. Okay. Hedonic preference. Yeah. It's actually not preference. It's a hedonic prediction classification. Okay. So what it basically means is we are predicting whether this experience is going to be pleasant or unpleasant. Okay. It's a prediction. It's not reality. It's a prediction. That's really important to know. And then it's this classification. You know what happens with classifications? You get classified as something, a troublemaker or a funny guy or a Dharma teacher or something, and then it's really difficult to escape from that classification. You get a classification. That's what happens with Vedana. Like something turns up, you know, whatever it is. It's that sweet, delicious thing. Oh, pleasant. I like that. It's nice. And we apply this niceness opinion onto that thing. It gets that classification, gets that stamp, and then we're like, you could never have enough of this, you know. And it really isn't true, right? It's an opinion that we take as a truth, okay? So now we're getting closer and closer to what this thing is. So it's very immediate. It's happening all the time. Every single moment of experience, you make contact with something and it gets a Vedana added onto it. Right, and we're being really precise in the language. It's really important to know that the Vedana is added onto it. Right, when you go on a flight, you take baggage, you know, and then you put that baggage somewhere, you know, and it gets attached onto you at some time, and you carry it. That Vedana is just carried on the experience. No experience, inherently, independently from its own side, has a Vedana. You know, if we take a really simple example. Most of us like chocolate cake, yeah? And we might say chocolate cake is nice. For the first bite, it's nice, you know? For the second bite, it's pretty nice. Third bite, probably we're not tasting it anymore. We're thinking about either getting more of this cake or, you know, thinking about something else. And then we kind of finish the cake. At some point, it stopped actually being nice. And then if we decide to eat the rest of the cake, there's going to become a point where it's going to become horrible, you know, really unpleasant experience once the belly is contained with a lot of fat and sugar and all the rest of that stuff. It was quite indigestible. Was it nice? Was it ever nice? Not from its own side, it wasn't. So the Vedana is this niceness opinion that we add on to things. And it's really helpful for us to see that as part of our path, as part of our practice. The not niceness of something is the same thing. No thing is inherently, say from its own side, not nice. Not even pain is not nice from its own side. Yeah? So, step number one, you don't ever have to agree with me. Okay, that's kind of rule number one, maybe. Yeah, but we'll keep exploring this and see what's going on. So, what is it? Just a few words to kind of describe it. It might be helpful just to think, where does it come from? So it's probably what we might call adaptive or evolved or very, very useful for getting us to the level of being that we are right now, you know, which is like super intelligent compared to, you know, what's kind of possible for atoms to get together and start to understand that we are atoms put together, you know, that kind of level of intelligence. To have survived long enough, evolved long enough, then we needed to be aware of threats and dangers. Yeah. And Vedana is very helpful at pointing out what's good and what's not good. Yeah. So one of the ways that I sometimes think about the niceness opinion is it was probably the answer to the question, is this lunch or am I lunch? Is this going to eat me or am I going to eat this? Yeah. Nice, not nice. Very important to make that decision. And you'll see there's a possibility that there's Vedana operating in all complex and simple life forms on Earth. It's part of perception. When you perceive the world, you also perceive, see, feel a niceness opinion about that thing. Yeah? If you check in, you can't have a moment of contact without having a feeling of Vedana, and then that creates the movement, the direction, the possibility space of that being. Okay. Why is it useful as a practice? Because noticing, there's a Vedana here, really supports an opening of the possibilities. Yeah. Opening of the possibility space that we exist in. Range of things that we can do. When it's not noticed, much less possibilities. Yeah. If it's nice, I've got to get it. If it's not nice, I've got to get rid of it. Yeah, we feel ourselves moving that way through our life and trying to organize the life so that we have a lot more things that receive a niceness opinion and a lot less things that receive a not nice niceness opinion. Yeah. The difference between Vedana when it's observed skillfully and wisely and patiently, it's a different world that we live in than the one when it's not observed in this way. Yeah. It really is. Very significant turning point. Yeah. Some people talk about links of dependent origination that build into patterns of dukkha. Right? You know, linked together. It's like there's contact, there's Vedana, then there's this pushing and pulling on experience and this agitation. We don't like this. We want to get out of it and kind of escape from it. Becomes this being that we are, and then we're in this stressful kind of situation. Yeah, kind of linking together of those things. And people who talk about this way of practicing actually say that Vedana is the weakest link in that chain. If you undo that link, all the rest of it can't construct in the same way. If you see, this isn't nice from its own side, why would I push and pull on it so much? When I'm not pushing and pulling it so much, I'm not so distressed, I'm not so uncomfortable, I don't need to become this being that's battling against dukkha, the dukkha experience. Yeah? Vedana is subtle. It's a subtle experience. And when we're having a more subtle experience, it's more delightful for us as well. So we're introducing ourselves into a freedom expression, right? So what we're saying is that Vedana participates in the building of experience. It's a builder of experience. It builds into dukkha, basically, through this escalation of things. So we could take an example, any time that there's, or maybe let's just take another little walk through this map, yes. Any time that there makes, we make contact with something, we either feel like I like it or I don't like it. Yeah, that subtle kind of, we might call it preference, yeah. It's not quite right, it's perhaps like the thing inside of preference, yeah. It leads that way, so I want this, I don't want this. And that becomes this pushing and pulling. And maybe I should get it, or I should get rid of it. And this builds and it escalates, and we get tighter and tighter as we go on. But what's also happening is that each of these experiences is also receiving a Vedana. Yeah? So even if that first impression was, this is nice, once we start grabbing onto something, contracting, the direct felt experience is not nice. Yeah? In that way, Vedana is an unself-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah, this would be nice to get. Let's grab it. Oh, no, it's not so nice. Oh, let's get out of this. Oh, let's get rid of that. I don't want to have that kind of experience. And then it builds again, another layer. And each time it's building, the Vedana flavor is actually getting stronger until it gets to this point of like, this Vedana is unbearable. Unbearable. And then something has to happen, yeah. We have to get away, we have to get rid of, yeah. And that fabricates another stronger sense of self. So, there's kind of a context, a place and a location for when Vedana practice is really helpful. Interestingly, any time experience has built up into some form of dukkha, it's quite helpful then just to notice this experience must have a Vedana. And maybe I can feel it, maybe I can sense it. But probably I can just guess. Oh, it's not nice. Or it's unpleasant. Oh, it's unpleasant. In the noticing, this is unpleasant. Maybe we can also just allow. And I said I wasn't really going to tie in this meditation to the talk particularly, but it seems like maybe it is worth just mentioning. Did you notice that if you were having an experience that seemed like it would be unpleasant and just not reacting to it, can allow it to become a little bit more pleasant? Yeah. And we're lessening that reactivity. We're actually giving ourselves that opportunity to have a little bit of freedom here. So whenever the experience builds up, we can allow it to depressurize through noticing the Vedana that's in there. And we don't, this is the great thing about it, is you don't have to like unpack it down. So well, what was the seed Vedana that kicked off this whole Vedana storm? Vedana practice can just be to notice the Vedana of this experience, this thing that we're contacting right now, not some prior thing, and then it just breaks that chain. Yeah? Because the chain is an ever-increasing reactivity to the building up of the Vedana. Does that make sense? And we're just deciding not to build it up again. Yeah? Many of you will know this teaching of the dart. Teaching. Did we already talk about this? Yeah. The arrows, the dart, this thing. So Zohar mentioned it this morning. The temptation is always to fire one more dart. Yeah? I shouldn't be having this experience. Not at my level. You know. Right. Yeah. It's fine. So this experience, yeah, can support us to depressurize, regulate, actually, yeah, and really importantly, gives us a footing into the experience, right? It's like very difficult at times to know, what can I do? What can I do here? It just feels like maybe like a climber when they don't see any place to take a footing or a handhold or whatever. You can guarantee this experience has a Vedana, right? And that Vedana, maybe subtle, many times in our life, is actually really quite obvious. Yeah. and many times it feels like it's very unpleasant. Furthermore, this practice can also be used as a way of resting and staying in the more quiet, the more subtle kinds of level of an experience. Yeah? So you could actually kind of just rest the attention at the arising of contact and vedana. Contact and vedana. In this moment, you will be contacting something and you will be experiencing some, oh, it's nice, it's not nice. We can just stay at that level, whatever we're doing, however this breath is, however this body sensation is, however these sound vibrations are. And so you could have the idea, just going to rest my attention at the bare sensate material. Yeah, you could try and do that. But what's also really helpful, because what's we don't want to build things up, is just seeing, oh yeah, and that's quite nice. And that's, yeah. Well, you don't need to follow those preferences. You know, you don't need to follow that direction. It's like, nice. Oh, not nice. Okay. Nice. Okay. Yeah, does that make sense? When did I say the other thing?
No.
Was it me or someone else? Okay. Yeah. So if I get it right, there's a teaching which is, I'm talking about something building up, and that there's like a subtle, we make contact with something, and then there's this will be nice or this will not be nice, right? Is a prediction about how this thing is going to be, okay? And that's like a concept that's laid on top of this thing, right? If that isn't seen, oh, I've done that thing, I've done that prediction thing, then it then leads to this pushing and pulling. So the pushing and pulling is a more coarse or a more built up, right, kind of part of this process. And what we're actually doing here, rather than notice, oh, I'm pushing away, oh, notice that I'm pulling towards me and I can kind of feel it in the contraction, I open the space. Here, we're actually dropping in what we'd call an insight, yeah? An insight into how experience is constructed, and also therefore an insight into how experience is faded back down again. Yeah. So immediately there's this kind of reactive, oh, that'd be nice, that won't be nice. It's just a guess, and we don't need to believe in guesses. You know, it's like, it's just an opinion. We don't need to believe in opinions. Opinions are not the truth of something. And if we don't then believe or follow and direct, then we don't end up with quite so much of this pushing and pulling. So it's a subtler version of that same process. Does that make sense? That kind of thing? Yeah, thanks for the question. Can I give an example? Sure. Okay. So Zohar thinks that maybe this is a point that you maybe haven't grabbed yet. So experience is built up. Yeah? This experience now is actually built up. It's built up of sensations, right? It's built up of vibrations. We'll speak later on exactly what the current understanding and what also the ancient understanding of what actually makes our perception of reality, how it kind of comes together. But we could say for now that we experience the world, and whenever we experience the world, we make contact through the senses, and when there's contact through the senses, there will be this vedana will come in, okay? And then if I'm not sensible to that, if I'm not sensitive to that, then it will build up into tanha, which is this pushing and pulling on existence, yeah? And that will actually build up even more into what's called upadana, and that's the clinging, craving kind of movement that we kind of talk about, attachment and taking life really seriously, and there's more and more self, me, my stuff, what I have to have building up in this experience, and at a certain point we would have to say, this is dukkha. Yeah, I'm contracted, I'm reactive, I'm resistant, I'm all of this. So to give a living example that many of us will know, right? At some point in time, a collection of sensations will gather together and we will recognize that they have the certain temperature and pressure that we would call pain. Yeah, and pain is what we would call an unpleasant sensation. Yeah, in that moment in time, a vedana has occurred, and we take it not as an opinion, as a fact. This is pain, this is unpleasant, this should not be happening, and therefore we need to, you know, get rid of this or respond to it or whatever the kind of thing is. And, you know, it will then get some solidity to it, some collection, some gathering, some focusing, some contraction, and that pain sensation will actually then feel more significant. What we typically experience when it comes to physical and emotional pain is the resistance to that pain, which is kind of built up. And some of this vedana stuff obviously is happening subconsciously and building up, and then it hits the attention. It's like, wow, it's this really big thing and I need to do something about it. In any moment, we can notice, oh, this is unpleasant. And ease, relax, soften around that. And it's like, oh, it's just unpleasant. It's just unpleasant. And so that's opening out the possibility space. What it doesn't add in is it wise then to move, to ease, to soothe? Is it wise to breathe around? Is it wise to open the space? Is it wise, you know, to do nothing at all? Pay attention to something else. It's just a bit of pain in the body. Pain is natural, it's normal. I can pay attention to something else. Okay? But vedana opens out that possibility space, because rather than like, I have to react, I have to do something, I have to move, I have to stop, I have to, you know, go and see a doctor or whatever, it's like, actually, what does this need, right? So vedana as a teaching is opening out the possibility space, and we will decide from our own ethics and sensibility and wholesomeness what we should do. So does that make sense? As like where vedana fits in the construction of experience? All right. Good, good, good. Yes, you can. Sure.
And it's tasty, then it's nice. It's not a guess. If I feel it, then it's not wrong. And it's not a guess. It's not about the future.
Sure.
Did I get it right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 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 So why am I saying that vedana is a prediction, a guess? Because it happens in that moment of the contact, and it suggests, you know, kind of like what to do about this thing. Yeah. But it's actually not co-arising in that felt sense of the experience. It's actually the prediction, imagination of that experience. And you can really kind of notice that it's actually not that the experience is this way from its own side. Yeah. The best way that you can know this is actually sensitively feeling into an experience and then knowing that it doesn't have that characteristic from its own side. Yeah. So it's a bit of a kind of more complicated thing further along, but I think it's an accurate way of describing the thing. Yeah. Yeah, of course. And you know, I think that what we're not disagreeing is the fact that nothing has its own vedana. Yeah. At the least, we could all agree that it depends on me, and it depends on the heart and the mind, the body, the experience, you know, of what I think this thing is, and the whole context, the timing, all that stuff. And it will change over time. Yeah. It is empty. It is empty. Everything is empty of having any particular vedana. Yeah. Let's go for another question. Yeah.
I feel that I sometimes I have vedana, but I don't
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
I wonder, what do you say about that? Because I find that many times that I instinctively don't let myself enjoy like a lot of really nice stuff, you know. So.
Totally. Yeah. So the question, if I'm getting it right, is that, you know, we do experience some pleasant Vedanas in our experience, and we don't actually allow ourselves to enjoy them quite enough, you know, and attention is more drawn towards, you know, what feels problematic, what feels troublesome, everything like this. Yeah. So I think this is a really important point, and that, you know, we can use this Vedana practice, as we were saying, for a number of possibilities. One of which is, if we start noticing at this level, then what we'll start noticing is that a lot of the things that tend to grab my attention are unpleasant Vedanas. Something that barely gets any of my attention is the pleasant Vedanas. They have to be pretty outstanding, you know, superstar pleasant Vedanas kind of get a little bit of attention for a little bit of time, and then we're like, yeah, yeah, but seriously, there's this really small annoying thing over here, and that's what I really should be paying attention to. And again, we can see it's adaptive. It's good for an evolved being to be highly aware of what's not good. Helps us to survive, doesn't help us to thrive, right? Now, if we start noticing at this level of Vedana, maybe we can introduce a little bit of choice about what shall we pay attention to. We can also include a little bit of wisdom. It's like, actually, this, even though it seems really insignificant, it hasn't got a pleasant Vedana, hasn't really got an unpleasant Vedana. It's got kind of somewhere in between, neither nor. Paying attention to this, for example, that we can hear. Not just what we can hear, that we can hear, that there is hearing. We completely overlook it so much of the day. I can hear the world. I can see the world. I can see a world and I can hear a world at the same time. It's amazing. And it's like, that gets classified as a neutral Vedana? I mean, this opinion prediction thing, it's got no clue. It's like, we should be, insane. Insane. What beauty is available to us. And we just kind of, oh yeah, hearing. The real thing is that I don't like what I'm hearing. Or I do like, or I wish I was hearing the things I liked. So we opens up this possibility space, you know, by tuning into this. And it involves us not to believe the predictions, not to believe the opinions, yeah, not to believe the Vedanas so much, right? Absolutely, great. So, what's it going to take, yeah? We want to be supporting ourselves to notice something which is subtler than something we normally notice. Yeah, I would say for me, if I didn't hear the teaching of Vedana in usually the most confusing way possible is the best way of hearing Vedana teachings, I don't think I would have discovered them for myself. I don't know if I would have bothered to look if there was something underneath this that's kind of patterning, emerging, subtling, subtilizing. Yeah. Operating on this subtle level. So, with all meditation practice, it's really helpful to get familiar with what's happening right here and now. How it's being supported, what's going on in this experience. And so, basically what we do in meditation is a practice called GOM. Tibetans use this word GOM, which I think is a lovely word. Has a good sound, GOM. I'm going to GOM. And GOM means to become familiar with your experience. And to become familiar with your experience in a subtler way really does require slowing down. It does require the simplification of retreats. Yeah. And so we've had a few days of slowing down, subtilizing. And so what we want is opening out of that space, easing, allowing, welcoming, this kind of choiceless loveliness kind of quality, maybe deepening the breath for some period of time. And what we're doing there is settling, supporting, you know, stabilizing the attention, And once it becomes stable enough, we can just notice every so often, I wonder what the Vedana of this moment is, this in-breath, of this sensation, of this sound, whatever it is that where we're paying attention. And that we'll have to support ourselves to remain there and just, I'm not going to react. I'm not going to follow it. I'm going to take an opinion as an opinion. Yeah. It's something that's overlooked. And we're bringing it into being. We're actually bringing that quality more and more alive. Yeah. So something it's important to say about subtle things is we really only get like a sense of the Vedana. So if you feel like, oh, I can't really directly sense any Vedana, I don't know what this is, you're right, you can't. You can't really sense Vedana. It's something that's probably happening subliminal, beneath the level of normal consciousness. Yeah. Operational processing that, you know, as I say, you can see it in the simplest of organisms. Yeah, they move away from heat, or they move towards what nourishes them. Yeah. For some reason, we're set up to wish to survive, or at least the ones that survived were. Yeah. And so here we are, in our condition, with a very, very subtle level of reactivity, alert to threats, present to nourishment, and kind of overlooking a lot of the rest of our experience. So Vedana practice requires a subtlety, but interestingly it also leads to subtlety. And you could say in a way that the Dharma is a path of subtilization. It's a path of moving towards the delicate, the quiet. Yeah. And I think that's a interesting way of understanding it. This is the Dharma of subtilizing. And you can see it, none of these are like an end in themselves, but we can move from the loud voices, you know, the loud demands, the loud things in life, to the quieter callings, the quieter intentions. Yeah. We can see it in that kind of movement from the obvious to the more refined. Yeah. And how that feels for us when we're quieter with something, when we're more subtle with something. We can see this movement also when we move from a sense of like form and materiality in things and kind of come more down into a sense of the energetics within this, the aliveness within this form, yeah, that brings it alive, that gives it the possibilities of life, and we can tune into that. It's a way of subtilizing our experience. Yeah, and really including all the inner space within anything that appears solid, or the outer space around which, you know, all of this is unfolding. Or talking of like the immateriality of an experience, the awareness in which all of these apparent solidities, separate beings, all of this is happening in awareness, made up of awareness. Your experience is whatever is appearing in awareness for you right now. And that noticing of that is subtilizing our experience, yeah. Another way of describing this path is moving from the habitual to the intentional. Choosing what to pay attention to, choosing how to pay attention to it. It's subtler, it's more delicate, it's more refined, it's more opening, more beautifying. Yeah. So just to sum it up, noticing Vedana is opening the matrix of possibilities of how we respond, what we pay attention to. Is this the Vedana you want to pay attention to? Or is there another one here you're overlooking? Would it be helpful now to incline into the beautiful, into the wholesome, into the delightful, even if there's some painful sensations here. Yeah. Opens out that possibility of how I meet these Vedanas. A lovely view a friend, a teacher, gave to me was everything that arises wishes to be met with kindness and care, regardless of the Vedana that gets projected onto it. Everything wishes to be met with kindness and care. A really interesting, radical view to take on experience. So let's just take a moment or two just to sit with our current flow of Vedanas, and we'll bring this talk to a close. So thank you for your listening, your presence, your participation in this talk. And we'll have a half hour for some walking and come together for the last practice session at 9 o'clock.